Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Thursday, June 30th, 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside famed video game developer of the Solitaire Conspiracy, John Wick Hex Volume, and today, celebrating the 10-year anniversary of Thomas Was Alone, Mike Biffle. Hello, woo! Mike.
Hey. Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I mistimed that sip.
I was going to say, you all that time to drink your coffee. You waited till, hey, Mike, turns and drinks his coffee. This
immediately showed myself to be an unprofessional. I'm sorry for the standards drop the audience is about to experience. I make the games. I don't talk about
You them. Don't talk on microphones or in podcasts. You haven't podcasted in forever. You don't know what you're doing. I understand. I don't know, you do it weekly for Play, Watch, Listen at all.
No. Alana does most of that. That's fine. I just kind of
sure. Yeah, the heavy lifting over there. Mike, how the hell are you? 10 years. You believe it?
I can't. I was saying before we went on, I can't. Feels simultaneously like 2 hours ago and 2 centuries ago. It's great. No, it's been great. It would change my life. It changed my life. And I get to do really cool stuff and, you know, make games forever, which is great. Which is the only goal I had in life, was just to make stuff. So yeah, I've been very lucky, very, very, very privileged, very lucky situation.
And that's the thing, whereas I hope most people know the story of Mike Biffle. And if they don't, they should stay tuned.
I think they teach it in schools now. I think
they should be. They should be, right? Yeah. What we're doing for the post show here on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames is basically doing a mini We of Cool Friends, where we'll talk to Mike about the 10-year anniversary of Thomas Was Alone, what it was like working at another job and then seeing that he was making enough money and Thomas Was Alone to be like, you know what? Peace. And just bouncing and going to make games. And then, you know. Now you work at Biffle Games. And I think, you know, I'll give you a preview of the kind
which
of
hard hitting coincidence.
Yeah. I was going to say, did the last name, your name being Mike Biffle, did that work for you or against you when you applied to Biffle?
I went to the interview. They said, it's like you were made for this job. Please come join us. Yeah, it was great. Damn. They were very kind about it. Yeah.
That's the perfect kind of thing you can see. You can't imagine it, but it works out that way sometimes. Just, that's how it goes. Mike Biffle, are you ready to put all your own stuff aside, all your promotion, all your games?
Yeah.
The Solitaire.
I'm not here to say that the game's available on Steam right now. Massive discount, Switch for Solitaire. No, not at all, mate.
I mean, Solitaire Conspiracy is available everywhere and criminally.
My greatest piece, my greatest work. Yeah.
Thank you. I agree. You know what I mean? A great cast in there because it's me. And then there's a bunch of other people. You bring in Alana for the DLC. You brought her in trying to make that be a thing. I understand.
I'm being generous to her. You know, obviously, like trying to shine some of your light on her. You know, I know it makes a difference. Well,
for a long time, I've been trying to toss the ladder back down and help Alana Pierce. You know what I mean?
You're a hero, yeah.
She's really a diamond in the rough. People just don't know about her. You know what I mean? I really want to get her name out there and do some. She doesn't want to do it. She likes being in the shadows. She likes being behind the curtain.
She's very shy.
I appreciate it, but I really think she's got some. Like I said, we'll talk all about your games, your career, and Thomas Was Alone in the post show that you got to come see on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. But for now, let's talk about the fact that the Cuphead DLC is great. God of War is really, 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 really not delayed. And everybody needs to be nice to Ron Gilbert. We'll cover all this and more because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. On patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, of course, you can write in with your questions, comments, concerns. You can get the show ad-free, and you can get it with that post show we do each and every weekday. If that wasn't enough, you'd be able to watch us record the shows live as we record them, just like we'll be doing this afternoon with PSI Love You, when we talk about what's next for Metal Gear with myself, Blessing, and Yong Ye from YouTube. However, if you have no bucks to toss our way, it is no big deal, ladies and gentlemen. You can get this show a number of free ways. You can watch us record it live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you're watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, it's your job to keep us honest. Go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later. On youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, and listening on podcast services around the Globe each and every weekday. If you wanted to go above and beyond, of course, give us your Twitch Prime subscription. We'll be talking about all the things you'll be getting with Prime Gaming in this episode. And of course, you could use the Epic creator code Kinda Funny when you're purchasing anything on the Epic Game Store, like Mike's Games, or when you're over there just playing your Fortnites and you Fall Guys, you can use the Epic creator code Kinda Funny right there and you get us a few bucks there. Rocket League. Man, one of them doesn't work, somebody said once, and I haven't bothered investigating it. Fortnite's the big one. You know what I mean, Mike? People love the V-Bucks. They're over there. Have you has Fortnite partnered with you for a Thomas Was Alone skin yet?
I'm waiting for the call. Thomas Was Alone has been in Little Big Planet, but not yet Fortnite. That's the... Yeah, give me a call.
Tim, well, I mean, people often say Little Big Planet, yeah, that's the major leagues. Fortnite's double A ball.
Exactly. Like, you know, I'm willing, again, like you with Alana, I'm willing to come down and do what I can to help the little guy, you know?
Throw a bone once in a while. Housekeeping for you, ladies and gentlemen. Why don't you throw us a bone? It's a fat five over on youtube.com/kindoffunny. The Thor Ragnarok rewatch is up on MCU in review, getting us ready for Love and Thunder. You can go check out some of Nick and I's best work possible. Of course, like I said, youtube.com/kindoffunny and podcast services around the globe under the MCU banner. Beyond that, guess what? It's June 30th. You know what that means. Yes, Cuphead DLC, but it is Tim motherfucking Getty's birthday today, ladies and gentlemen. Tim, still 30 under 30 in our hearts. He is celebrating his birthday the only way he knows how, which is streaming Cuphead with Barrett right after this. Twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you watch, or if you're not watching us live, you're listening later, you're driving your car, you're having an iced coffee saying, I should have put more sweetener in it. Remember, you can get all of our archived streams over on youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Gordon McGuire and Fargo Brady. Today, we're brought to you by Athletic Greens. We'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. Seven items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Number one, ladies and gentlemen, Cuphead. The delicious last course is upon you today. Like I said, we're streaming it for Tim's birthday right after this, so him and Barrett are going in blind to play and try to beat each other. However, the reviews are up. When I gathered it this morning, Mike, Metacritic had it at an 89. That's a high Metacritic, Mike.
It's very high. I'd love to get that with.
I was going
to
say, have any of your games ever gotten 80? Have any of your games ever gotten
80? Yes, a couple have. Shut up.
Okay, we'll go to IGN.com first. They gave it a 9. Mitchell Saltzman, right? Yeah. Cuphead, the delicious last course is the perfect send-off for a game that embodies the phrase one of a kind. Experienced players will likely muscle their way through the 6 bosses and optional King of Games mini-bosses in just a handful of hours. But the quality of those hours far outweighs their quantity. That's right. All of the bosses, including the King of Games mini-bosses, are among the best in the whole game. And that's saying a lot when you consider how high the bar was already set. I'm not normally one for dessert, but if you dine on Cuphead, you don't want to miss the delicious last course. GameSpot agreed, gave it a 9 as well. Stephen Petit wrote, Cuphead, the delicious last course, is worth the long wait. Ms. Chalice gives players a brand new way to approach each boss, and each of the new boss fights is an imaginative triumph from both a visual and gameplay perspective. The new parry-focused fights add a twist to the Cuphead platforming formula that feels right at home while offering something new to the experience. Even the already great main campaign is improved thanks to Ms. Chalice and a trio of new weapons that shake things up for Cuphead and Mugman. Cuphead, the delicious last course, adds more than a cherry on top. It changes the recipe to create a game that's more scrumptious than before. And then Game Informer wasn't far off with an 8.75. Marcus Stewart wrote, the delicious last course sends our jolly beverage containers off on a high note. It offers an entertaining final exam of your skills while also freshening up the original adventure by giving players a cool new character to enjoy. It's more Cuphead at the end of the day, but I had a great time revisiting Studio MDHR's wonderful animated universe, testing my mettle against its villains, and feeling fist-pumping triumph all over again. Mike, are you rushing in to play Cuphead, the delicious last course today?
I am rushing to watch streams of it because I failed to get good. I couldn't get my, I'm too old, basically. My thumbs would not do my bidding, but it is beautiful, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Is it that you're too old, or is it just not your cup of tea for a game? Like, were you ever into the punishing, like, hey, let's destroy you and like really push you on?
I've never been like, for me, yeah, it's never been my genre, or like, well, platforming obviously and action is, but like the kind of kicking me until I get it, like,
yeah,
for me there always has to be a bit of exploration. I'm cool with it, with, you know, like a like a Sekiro or a Dark Souls, where it's like you can go and explore different paths, you can find different ways, you can kind of figure this out in your own way. But yeah, when it's just like a relentless, like hitting a wall, I just don't have the patience for it. But again, a massive admiration for the game. It looks
incredible. My gosh, yeah, no,
I know if you're into that kind of thing, it's incredible, right?
Like, I'm in the exact same boat as you, where I look at Cuphead and I watch Cuphead and I'm like, oh my gosh, what a work of art. But yeah, not the kind of game I am drawn to or whatever. I do know. Ms. Chalice is supposed to make it a little bit easier. That's been a big thing here with her addition to the game. So maybe it'll work there. Barrett, you are one of the Cupheads. How hyped are you today to be able to finally dig into this game?
I mean, this reminds me of when the game itself was actually coming out, because it's been so long, right? Like the game was originally revealed, I think that was like 2015. And then when did that game finally come?
The reveal. It was revealed before
that, right? Yeah.
During Up at Noon, I reached out to Studio MDHR and was like, hey, I just got this YouTube video of your game. Like, I do this talk show on IGN. Do you want to come? And they're like, yeah, we're up in the middle of nowhere, Canada. And I was like, oh, I don't have that kind of budget. Good luck to you. I was like, I'll never hear from this game again.
We eventually had that budget because they came to the studio at one point. And
That was a different thing, though. You know what I mean? When IGN notices this game's going to be big, yes. When Greg wants to bring random ass indie developer on Up at Noon, people are like, well, is there really, you know, Fran was like, will there be a VPH return on this?
The fact that you tried is why we love you, though. The fact that you tried.
Honestly, I didn't try. I reached out. I was like, if you're going to be on our coast, I can make it work. And I remember that being a big deal. I'm like, are you ever going to come to SF? They're like, no, why? We will never be. Like, all right, well, bye. Yeah. Good luck to you.
And then it was so exciting when the actual like game was finally coming out after so many years of waiting. And this feels the same because they announced the DLC years ago. Like, I remember the only E3 that I went to was when I was still at IGN, and they were showing off the DLC like it was coming out in the next 6 months or whatever, and now it's been 4 years later, and I'm so excited for this. So yeah, I'm excited to actually like play it. All I've seen so far is the one boss that y'all got to kind of preview at a summer game. And so, because I've been wanting to go in blind, so for today, so I'm excited to just have more. I started up another playthrough last night just to kind of get like a remembrance of the controls, since it's been a little bit.
Of course.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I love that it's reviewing so well. I think it's like because of how well that game reviewed, and it's just like, I feel like when it comes to DLC, it's always harder for the DLC to live up to like what the original like piece of media did, right? And seeing everybody else and people that I trust review it so highly, I'm so excited. I can't wait for, you know, let's get the show over. Let's just play some Cuphead right now.
Mike, as a developer, and you've a developer who's made DLC before, like, how do you approach adding to a game or wanting to move on to the next thing? And then also, yeah, like Barrett's talking about, try to live up to the hype of what the original project was.
It's challenging because, and to be honest, I've generally infuriated my business partner by usually wanting to move on immediately. Like, it's a hard thing to make a game. And when you finish it, like, the urge to like go on and do something completely different is very strong. When we have done it, it's been cool because it gives you an opportunity to go and maybe try those things that didn't quite make it in. There's often developers, when they're making a game, it becomes a refrain, especially towards like the second half of a project, of like, oh, this is for the sequel. We'll do this in the next game. We'll do this in the DLC. Sure. Like, it becomes this kind of big bucket that you're throwing all the cool ideas into. And it can be very cathartic to then just kind of, if you have a game that hits, that's got an audience, and you kind of justify it, to go back and pull out all those cool ideas from the bucket. And also then as well, you got the benefit of hindsight, because you can see how the audience is reacting. You can go, oh, people love that thing that we didn't realize was the thing. And you can kind of dig in and build on that. And developers love that. Ultimately, all of us got into this so we could make stuff to entertain people. So people are always just, we're just always really happy to take the opportunities, like, build on that stuff.
You talk about, you know, being the usual refrain from a developer, right? Being finishing a project and ready to move on to the next thing. Is that something you think my side, and not the games press, the games game players, the players, gamers, that's what they call it, right? Gamers.
Players.
Is that something we don't understand? Because I do think there's always that thing where, you know, we get the game and usually, right, depending on how long it is, you beat it over a weekend or a week, and then you're immediately like, what about the sequel? And like, I think we see that push and pull all the time with people leaving studios. You're like, oh my God, why would you leave that studio? You're making X, Y, and Z, but they've been making that for 5 years. Do they want to commit another 5 years to going on to the sequel?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, obviously, like, I do it. I've done it my whole life, and I plan to do it for the rest of my life. Like, it's definitely an awesome job making games, but it is a job, right? Yeah. And like any job, you know, you hit a point, maybe you've been, you know, if you were doing a job where you worked on the same thing or in the same place for a few years, you might get bored and want to move on, even if it was the coolest thing in the world. So, like, yeah, like you say, there's a disjoint there between game as a job for the people making it and then the game as, you know, the thing that the audience enjoys.
Yeah.
But there are different people. There are people who've been working. I mean, we're going to come back to Ron Gilbert later, right? There are people who've been working on the same game forever because they love and are proud of it, and they're happy with the audience. They like to make stuff. But there's also, yeah, like at the end of a project, sometimes you just want to move on. And I definitely, I'm more, I get excited about new ideas. So I'm often kind of being pulled in lots of directions by ideas, but it's also fun to go back. We did it with Subsurface and Quarantine Circular, where we kind of went in and iterated on the same idea, which could also be really rewarding.
For sure. Mikey O is keeping us honest that you're wrong, saying Cuphead's first teaser trailer hit YouTube on October 25th, 2013, with a card in the video saying coming 2014. Wow. Which didn't exactly pan out that way, but that was it. And like I said, yeah, the video I saw was something a fan submitted from YouTube. I think maybe they saw it at a trade show or somewhere else, but who knows. But speaking of developers, their audience, and talking to them, let's move on to story number two on the Roper Report, God of Drama. As you know, ladies and gentlemen, we have gone back and forth all over this place and keep coming up with, will God of War Ragnarok come out this year? There was a whole hullabaloo this week on the internet where there was a rumor started that we're going to get the release date today, Thursday, June 30th. Then people started saying you weren't going to get it. Then people started getting involved, and there's been more action overnight or in the last 24 hours. We'll start with Jason Schreier, of course, at Bloomberg, who writes or tweeted on the God of War Ragnarok rumors. As of very recently, there was indeed a release date announcement planned for Thursday, June 30th, per people familiar. Recent tweets from Corey Barlog suggest that is no longer happening. Still, as far as I know, the game has not been delayed again. What Jason, of course, is referring to is, I was saying, this hullabaloo is going on. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Corey Barlog took to Twitter and wrote the following. Dear all, if it were up to me, I would share all the information when I know about it. But it is not up to me. So please, be patient. I promise things will be shared at the earliest possible moment they can be. We make games for you. We get to make games because of you. End tweet. Of course, this set off a firestorm of very entitled people being like, no, give me my toys and my candy now, including the gamer 1988, who tweeted at Corey, why won't you just go on and tell us that Ragnarok is delayed so that we can move on and plan the rest of the year? Seriously, this is getting frustrating. There was no punctuation in any of that, of course, to which Corey responded, because it's not. So indicating, of course, God of War is not getting delayed. They are, of course, we know it's supposed to be this year, 2020, but they are not ready to confirm a release date. Mike, from the outside, sipping your iced coffee over there, how do you feel about any of this? Like, well, I mean, do you see this going on? You're just like, oh God.
I can see where the frustration comes from. The thing that I think people forget in these moments is no one in the world cares more about Ragnarok coming out and being good than Corey and his team. Like, they are doing everything they can. They're fixated on this. As much as you care about when this game comes out, I promise you, you don't care as much about that as the people who are working on it and the people around you. So I always feel bad because I've been lucky. I've not been kind of at the center because our games aren't as popular as God of War. But like, it is... It's always weird looking in from the outside as another developer and just going, this at a moment of probably, like, you know, it's stressful the end of a project or getting towards the finish line on a project, to then have this on top of that is, I feel for them in that situation. It sucks. But yeah, it'll be done when it's done, I assume, is the answer that Corey would tweet if he could. But yeah.
And that's the thing that, you know, you figure. Obviously, the pivot here during COVID and everything else and every other game, making games has never been easy, obviously, but the pivot there and then figuring out org lines and timelines, and you imagine, yeah, they're probably down to, they still seem incredibly confident in 2023 or 2022, sorry. So you figure then they have to be sitting there going like, well, is it going to be October, whatever? Or, and if it didn't make that date, it would be November, whatever, or then it's going to be December. Like, you know, obviously every date on the calendar, but there's got to be these like different milestones they're trying to hit to figure out when it really will be.
Yeah.
When they know it, they'll know.
They'll be working their way through their milestones. But the reality as well is the way the audience reacts to not knowing something is can be tough. But the way the audience reacts to something changing is much, much worse. So there's probably lots of conversations going on with any game, but with this game in particular, of like, they don't want to say something that then they have to pull back from if they're not sure of something, sure. if something's not going to line up. And that's not always that the game's delayed. That could be as simple as there are other things happening at Sony and other games coming out, and they're kind of aligning things, and they something might want to shift a few weeks back and forth. There's always so much going on, and generally as well, when I've had, I don't have any knowledge of this situation, but when I've had knowledge of these situations before, it's always something more mundane than the audience thinks it is. It's always just like, oh, we can't announce on this date because it's a public holiday in this yep. country, and therefore that would cause this. And it's always really boring. It's very rarely like a conspiracy about trying to cover something up. It's usually just
something in another really territory
to announce yeah. and release a game internationally, right? Like, it's just a lot of moving parts. And a lot of people trying to move those parts around. So yeah, I get the interest. I feel for the people at the center of these storms whenever it happens.
And the thing I think is so hard to ever explain or communicate, and I obviously Corey's been doing this a long time, but
sure.
to anybody who's in that storm, like you're talking about it, right? It's the whole crux of the issue that once they announce the release date, and again, they hit it or whatever, like no one will ever think about this again. Never. We are never going to sit here and have a real conversation about like, oh, remember how long it took to get God of War Ragnarok's release date? What was that thing's problem?
Yeah, because, you know, Greg, I got to plan the rest of my year, Greg, over around this 20-hour game, Greg. I've got, you know, I got 6 months of left year? Of this Corey. Year, and I got to plan all around yeah. 20 hours, Greg.
Yeah. I feel
never gamer, forget this, Greg.
The Gamer 1988, if you're out there, I feel for you, brother. How are you going to plan the rest of your year? When are you going to take your vacations? When are you going to see your family? I get it. We've all been there.
I mean, that guy's 33 years old, so you know he's got responsibilities, I'm assuming, from with an 88 tag, so you know, lots of life around to organize, I suppose. But yeah, it's I get why it's good. That's the issue as well, as a developer, is always like, it's really flattering that people care. Like, you're yeah. obviously the thing we want people to be engaged, we want people to be excited, we want hype. So it is always this balancing act of like, I don't begrudge people being excited, but yeah, there's a point where it's like, you know, you don't need to be sending stuff to the individuals trying to get the work done.
And that's the hardest part about it, right? It's, you know, a broken record here, kind of funny, but the fact that the negativity is what motivates people to tweet, to reach out. It's people love your game and play your game, and they put your game down and like they tell their friend maybe over coffee they loved it and they move on with their life. Whereas when they're yeah. mad, when the gamer 1988 can't fucking figure out when he's taking vacation to play God of War Ragnarok, that's when he's going to go to Corey and be like, you're lying to us. And this is not related to this, but it's so fresh in my mind. I have no idea. With all the airline stuff that's happening and how hard, you know, it's so hard to get flight attendants right now. And like there's flights getting canceled. I was chuckling to myself the other night, remembering an IGN work trip coming back from LA. And it was the normal thing where it's like, we're the last flight out, but the crew's late. And if the crew doesn't get there, like they're going to have to cancel, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was that thing where they kept giving the updates of where the crew was, and they kept figuring, like pushing it around and doing stuff. And at one point the guy got on there and it was like seventh announcement. And everybody's really afraid. And this old man got up in the middle and just goes, you're lying to us. And it was the first time I've ever seen a Twitter thread in real life. And the guy's like, I'm not lying to you, sir. I'm not lying to you.
That sounds like a clerk story.
Speaking of being real jackasses on the internet and horrible to people who you love, number three on the Roper Report, Ron Gilbert won't post anymore about Return to Monkey Island. This is Andy Robinson over at EGC. Ron Gilbert has said he will no longer post about Return to Monkey Island online due to what he called, quote, personal attack comments. The developer has received criticism from some fans over the art style change between the classic Monkey Island titles and the upcoming sequel, criticism which he has previously called sad. On Thursday, Gilbert claimed on his personal blog that the negativity was becoming too much for him and that he would be shutting down the comments and no longer sharing about the game. At the time of publishing, the site was offline. Quote, I'm shutting down comments. People are just being mean, and I'm having to delete personal attack comments, he wrote. It's an amazing game, and everyone on the team is very proud of it. Play it or don't play it, but don't ruin it for everyone else. I won't be posting any more about the game. The joy of sharing has been driven from me. Boo. Boo.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me right now? Ron Gilbert, awesome. Such a lovely man, made so many games people love, and is also making not the least controversial, but the least controversial games. He's making Monkey Island. You know what I mean? Like, what are we talking about? Why are we chasing him to this thing? And then to look into it, right, where he's talking about the art style, the VGC article goes on to say, of course, Rex Crowley, the artist and designer behind Little Big Planet, Tearaway, and Knights and Bikes, previously confirmed on Twitter that he's leading the art for Return to Monkey Island. Mm-hmm. Gilbert has praised Rex effusively on his blog in the past. We fucking love Rex, it's kind of funny. We were huge. Yep. He came by and demoed Knights and Bikes. We love Rex. Everybody knows that. And his art's great. This looks great. Like, shut up. God damn it. Why can't people, like, and that's the thing, like, we talk about the toxic gamer culture, and it's always so easy to lob it at Call of Duty, lob it at Halo, lob it at whatever first person shoot. The Return to Monkey Island's audience is being dicks about the art style of come on, what are we doing right now? Let people create what they want to create. Everybody should be thrilled. They should be thrilled they're getting a Return to Monkey Island.
Yeah,
and this is one of those things you never thought you'd get again.
And wasn't a thing where, like, Ron was it was like literally years, and I forget the exact story of, like, whether, like, he had the rights or not, but, like, this has been years and years and years in development, and
yeah,
to have, like, to be, and I it's just so fucking sad, because I understand that there's probably so much fear. The longer you wait to, like, come back to something of, like, not even just, like, this kind of reaction, I feel like was maybe last on their mind, maybe not last, but, like, more of just like, will people care about this project? Like, do people actually want this? Like, we hear people say they want this, but, like, will that actually, will we see that return?
Will they show
and
up?
Then will they show up? And then, like, to see them show up, but to show up angry over an art style that looks sick as hell. Like, what, you want them to, like, remake the art style from the, what did Monkey Island launch on, Greg? It was back in, like, PC days, PC, and stuff like
that. Yeah, old PC, the LucasArts, full throttle, all that. Yeah,
yeah, like, what, you want them to go back to exactly that where it's going to, you know, look blurry and stuff like that? Like, no, let them get creative and, like, really cool creative art styles, too. Like, it makes so much sense when I didn't realize who the exact, like, artistic director was. But when you listed off all those games, I was like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because I see that in this game and it looks dope as hell as a, you know, a very small fan of Monkey Island. I vaguely remember playing them as a kid.
Not that small.
Like Grim Fandango and stuff like that. Well, compared to your height, Greg. It's, man, this just bums me out.
I'm still reading on VGC. Monkey Island is a series of adventure games. The first two installments were released in 1990 and 1991, following the misadventures of Guybrush Threepwood as he struggles to become the most notorious pirate in the Caribbean. Don't be mean to people, Mike. You especially.
I'm terrible. I'm awful on the inside. I'm a very cruel person. No, it's a shame. I don't know. I've not seen the criticisms, but my understanding is that they went beyond just, like, we're disappointed with this choice.
Oh, yeah.
Cruel stuff. So that sucks.
Obviously,
it's also worth.
You're allowed to have opinions and criticism, yada yada yada. It's when the as Ron's talking about, people are being mean, and I'm having to leave personal attack comments.
Exactly, and that's uncalled for. Like, again, these are just people. Like, these are just people. Like the developers of the games you love are not, like, gods who need to be pulled down from their pedestals necessarily. They're just blokes and women who are making cool stuff and just need to be you just need to treat them with basic human respect. The other thing, unfortunately, as well, is anyone who, and you know, you're going to know this more than me, Greg. Actually, you have a much more healthy ego than I do, so I imagine maybe it's not so much of an issue for you. But the way that you outweigh negative feedback to positive when you're being blasted on the internet, like, it's very easy. Like, you can have 10 people say something nice to you, one person says something cruel, and that's the one you'll remember, you know?
Of course.
And at scale, especially with someone like Gilbert, who's making something that lots of people are excited about, just by definition, he's going to get a lot of awful stuff, and it does weigh heavy. So, yeah, again, feel very sympathetic to that. That sucks.
Yeah, 100%.
Someone in the chat pointed out, Big Boss Terra says, someone legit said Ron's art choice was leftist. What does that mean? What does that mean?
Use a lot of the color red. Use a lot of the color red.
Using a lot of colors and, you know, stylized line work. It's very leftist, in my opinion. Leftist. And that just tells me, you know, Greg, is that, you know, these fans who are upset are just a bunch of old fucks. You know what I'm saying?
That's some bad news for pirates in general as well. If you don't like leftist views. Yeah.
We haven't done a hashtag PS We Love You XOXO in a long time, ladies and gentlemen. But we're doing it right now. Everybody go to twitter.com, Grumpy Gamer. That's where you can find Ron Gilbert. Send him some sweet, nasty love. Tell him you love what the game looks like. Tell him you're excited for it. Just tell him, you know what? He's Ron Gilbert, of course, just an interesting individual. Years and years and years and years ago, when he came by up at noon, we were talking about shows he was watching at the time. We're like, oh my God, blah, blah. And he was, and it turned, and I was like, well, he's like, I just watched this episode. I'm like, oh man, you're going to go home and like finish the rest of them tonight? And he's like, no. What I do is I make a little TV schedule and I put it on the refrigerator. That's so awesome. Even though he can watch as much as he wants of whatever show, he makes a thing where it's like tonight I watch at 7 o'clock, like whatever, Stranger Things, if it would have been that. But he keeps it to it. He has the one and then he stops, and the next week he comes back. Like, he has his own little network. And I thought that was so cool. I remember it however many years later.
That's sick.
That's fun.
It is fun. Number four on the Roper Report. More bad news for video game developers. Layoffs suck, and they're happening all the time. We have two from you. Both are from Kotaku. We'll start with Zach's report on Niantic. The San Francisco-based publisher cut 85 to 90 jobs and canceled four in-development games, including a Transformers spinoff announced last year called Heavy Metal, according to a Bloomberg report published today. Bloomberg further reported that an email was sent from the CEO, John Hankey, to staff that said the company was, quote, facing a time of economic turmoil, and that after previous attempts to cut costs, Niantic still needed to further streamline our operations in order to best position the company to weather any economic storms that may lie ahead, end quote. Meanwhile, Unity also had layoffs. Still, Kotaku Ari reports, Unity has a statement now confirming the layoffs and also confirming they're affecting 4% of its workforce, or slightly more than 200 people, going off the latest employee count from last year's SEC 10K form. Boo again. What a day for boo. Ooh, news, Mike.
You brought me on a really happy day. Cheers, Greg.
You wanted to come on. You said, let me come on and talk about Thomas Was Alone. I said, we'll get to it eventually.
What could go wrong on the
10-year anniversary?
Yeah, what could go wrong? It's Thursday. Like, what bad news could happen on Thursday? Yeah, no, it sucks. It really sucks. The games industry's kind of hiring and firing loop is way too much like a roller coaster a lot of time. It sucks.
Have you seen, and I know obviously you're your own company and you know, you've gone from being Thomas Was Alone to being a company that employs people and does all these different things and yada, yada. Biffle Games is a full-blown company now, but in general.
That's our tagline underneath is Biffle Games, a full-blown company.
You're welcome to you. That's great. But when you look out, and especially over your 10 years, have you seen it get better? I feel like when 10 years ago at IGN, when we'd be doing news, and I honestly go back even further, like 2008, 9, whatever, it seemed like it would be that thing of like, oh, they're ramping up to get the game ready. The game's ready. They lay off all the contractors and bring the team back down and then up and down and up and down. It seems like we don't hear as much about that. And I know, ladies and gentlemen, we hear a lot about layoffs. I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm just saying it doesn't seem to be as cyclical as it used to be. But clearly it's happening. And I also think part of this is the recession coming to America right now and all that other stuff. Do you think it's better or in general for game devs right now than it was 10 years ago?
I think it's better. I think a lot of it is down. I'll give the audience credit for that, because I think outlets like your own and others, and I think the audience and the communities that have sprung up from those have kind of started to emphasize compassion and actually giving a shit about the people who make games. Mm-hmm. And I think that does have an impact. Like, you know, companies and the people who own them 100% pay attention to what the general audience's reaction is to news events and what the stories are. And if they see that the audience do not like the fact that, you know, when a AAA game comes out, most of the workforce is immediately fired, then that does make a difference. And it doesn't make a difference to every company. It doesn't make a difference every time, but cumulatively, brick by brick, the audience, you know, caring about us has an impact, and vocalizing that care and, you know, talking about it and sharing that information, that matters. And I think a large part of that is both from the audience, but also, yeah, from the press and coverage side, like people basically kind of not just regurgitating press releases, people actually looking at how staff are treated and how working conditions can be improved. The audience is as informed as the information they receive. And I think the audience is more informed now than when I started my career. So yeah, I think it's improving, but yeah, it's not over, as you say. So, but it seems to be getting better.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, obviously, with the recession, how that'll go and what it'll actually net out for you know, an industry that's been booming and that obviously boomed during the pandemic, right? We saw so many more players come in, so many, you know, record sales for so many different things. We'll see how that nets out now as we go further. But obviously, thoughts to everybody at Niantic and Unity who have lost their jobs and hopefully can land somewhere great. Speaking of money, ladies and gentlemen, did you know that Kind of Funny needs it to make things happen, like the mics and the hosts and the things? You know that studio we've been working on for 2.5 years? Woo-hee, let me tell you, that ain't cheap. That ain't cheap. That's why you should go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Of course, you get a bevy of benefits, like getting the show ad-free, getting the post-show we're going to do with Mike, getting to watch us do PS I Love You, the Yonye later today. But, of course, you get the show me and Barrett just did, an exclusive Q&A podcast over there you can get for $1. That's super exciting. The Next Gen podcast just recorded. That's exclusive to Patreon. We're really trying. So you should go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and kick us a few bucks if you think we're doing a good job. Again, it would do a whole bunch of different stuff, like get you this show without ads. But guess what, Jack? You're not listening over there right now. So here's a word from our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by something Tim literally uses every day. AG1. Tim's birthday is June 30th, and he decided to give himself the gift of taking care of his body with AG1. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. All the things! Tim mixes AG1 with his water, loves the taste, and says he's feeling better than ever. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews, and Athletic Greens is a climate-neutral certified company. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills or supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutrition insurance. Number five on the road. Well, first off, in the chat, Lotus Chief says, Greg said that like Kind of Funny's in trouble. Is everything all right in Kind of Funny? Like, yes, everything's fine. I'm just letting you know, studio's really expensive, all right?
Things cost things.
I'm just saying, like, you've been having fun with the content. You haven't contributed to Patreon in a couple years.
I'm not cheap.
A couple bucks. What's the big deal?
I'm not cheap.
Yeah, you think Mike's here out of his own goodwill to promote Thomas Was Alone's 10th anniversary and all the sales it's on right now? Are you kidding me?
Never.
Last Glass Gaming says, lots of Kind of Funny loans. Lots of loan sharks. All right, number five on the Roper Report. Would you watch a Persona TV show? Matt came at IGN reports, Sega is looking to expand further into film and TV by exploring potential live-action adaptations for games developed by Atlus. In an exclusive reveal to IGN, Sega says that expanding storytelling forms... Yeah, that's right. And a new and important part of Sega's overall business strategy. This is why Sega is opening up Atlus's critically acclaimed library of games, which includes series like Shin Megami Tensei, Persona, and Catherine, to potential live-action film and TV adaptations. Quote, Atlus's worlds are filled with high drama, cutting-edge style, and compelling characters, said Toru Nakahara, Sega's lead producer on the live-action Sonic the Hedgehog movies and Sonic Prime TV series. Quote, stories like those from the Persona franchise really resonate with our fans, and we see an opportunity to expand the lore like no one has seen or played before. Nakahara, who is also Sega's head of entertainment productions for film and TV, adds, together, Sega and Atlus are working to bring these stories and worlds to life through new mediums and for new audiences, end quote. Sega didn't confirm which production companies it's interested in working with, other than to say that it is currently exploring live-action film and TV projects with a various studios and producers. I got there in the end. I fell apart. This is extremely exciting to me because I think Catherine's story is really weird and cool. If you want to go back and play it, problematic in certain points, obviously, because it's dated and you know, life's moved on in a very good way, even though we keep trying to set it back with this fucking Supreme Court. But I digress right now. And then, of course, Persona, the stories are so awesome. But I think for so many people, and even with five for me, right? Do I want to put that many hours in? Do I want to do a turn-based thing? Yada, yada, yada. Getting that into a live action or a new medium could be super exciting. And Biffle, you're not a big Persona guy, right? But would you be down to watch a Persona movie or TV show?
Hell yes. Hell yes. Like, yeah, no, it's, I love it. I love that. That opportunity to take those stories broader. I know weirdly, this came up on the next episode of our popular podcast, where Troy was talking about, about the Last of Us show and about how it is just this opportunity to kind of tell this story to an audience who will never, ever pick up a PS4 controller. And that's the thing. That's the value of this, I see, is games have stories that are world-class. It used to be games had good stories for games. Now games have good stories. And there is an audience out there who will love this stuff, who are not going to come to us, so we should go to them. It's great.
Yeah, really cool. Now, of course, what we think about this doesn't matter. Barrett Courtney, Persona 5 super fan. Are you excited? Nervous? Does this do nothing for you? Where are you at?
This does nothing for me, I think. And that's because Persona has been adapted into like anime before. Like I haven't watched the Persona 4 anime, but like I've seen highlights of like just how goofy and weird it is. I've tried out the Persona 5 anime. It doesn't really add anything new. I think I would be more interested in this if it was something like not like a one-to-one adaptation, but if they try to tell like an original story, like in the Persona universe, like I think that would be cool and interesting because there's so much to explore there. And I think that would like, again, like open it up to new audiences, like introduce them to this new world for people who may never pick up a controller, but maybe for people who are like, oh, this is really cool. This is essentially just like adult Digimon in a way, because it's just these kids who get sucked into the world, get partnered with monsters to fight other monsters and then have to fight God later. Like that's pretty much plot-wise what it is, and Persona stands out in the gaming sphere because of, you know, the themes the themes that are written about and specific things like that, and also like just how special especially like 5's gameplay is, with how even though it's a turn-based RPG, it doesn't feel turn-based because of just how well it flows between turns and stuff like that. Does that all really transfer to another medium? That's where, like, I have a little bit of my doubts. But I'm not, like, anti-Persona, movie or live-action show. But it does, personally, right now, nothing for me, just because it has been attempted, at least in the anime sphere, and it, you know, really hasn't, you know, made any waves in that angle. So, yeah.
What I think is interesting is, like, not interesting and why this doesn't really move the needle is this is such a nebulous thing. You know what I mean? Like, if you're out there right now, ladies and gentlemen, Kinda Funny is happy to announce that it is down to let the Kinda Funny the Animated Series become a movie. So if anybody wants to come talk to us about making a movie,
that intro from the Jurassic Park retrospective on a loop. I would watch that. Man,
you name it. We don't have the rights to Small Watto, but I'll keep trying to get them. And you want to do that? You want to keep it at real scale as a movie? We are excited to work with any producer or production company that would want to do it, right? That's what this kind of reads like. I'm just like, cool, we're signal, here's the flare, we're ready to talk. But I'm with you, Barrett, of like, I wouldn't want it to be a shot for shot or even a super, oh, we have to be super authentic to Persona 5, right? I just think the Phantom Thieves are such a cool idea, and such a cool idea for a bunch of high schoolers that, yeah, I would say, if, and this is me obviously being a Western person, but I would be like, you know, you move that to America, it is that they are, you know, that somebody's trying to take over the school and take over the town, the small town they all live in or whatever like that. I think you could do stuff with that and make it really fun. But yeah, I wouldn't be like, it has to be accurate to this and you have to go after this very specific art guy who's stealing all the paintings and shit like that.
And it's one of those things, it reminds me of like, if you're going to do it, like definitely try to, and this is why I don't want it to be like straight up adaptive, but like tell your own story, find your own almost like writing style and vibe for it. And I say that specifically because of the history of anime to live action adaptations where there are certain like humor beats that are like well balanced with very serious moments and things like One Piece and Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood and stuff like that, that have been attempted to be turned live action that just like don't work, I think. And that's where I get a little concerned again as well, if you're trying to do a straight up adaptation, because, you know, outside of the RPG stuff, right, Persona is literally like it's an anime outside of like the actual gameplay stuff. So it's just, yeah, it's an interesting one. We'll find out more about it, and looking at my watch here, 10 years.
I was going to say, what'll happen is you'll hear that somebody's optioned it, and then we'll see if it actually goes anywhere from there.
Exactly.
Well, we'll wait and see. Speaking of things getting remade, number 6, they're remaking the remake of 13. This is Luke Plunkett over at Kotaku. In 2003, a shooter called 13 was released. Based on a series of Belgian graphic novels, it tried something unique for the time by emulating the comics' cel-shaded look. And while it wasn't the greatest shooter ever made, it was still incredibly cool, quickly earning itself cult status. Then, 17 years later, everything went to hell. A remake of the game was released, and it quickly became one of the worst examples of this kind of business. It was so bad, in fact, that everyone involved ended up issuing an apology, saying, quote, 13 does not meet our quality standards, and that the pandemic has impacted the game's production on many levels. Now, this would normally be the point where everyone involved eats shit, the game goes away, and we all get on with our lives, especially since the original game is still available for pocket change. But publishers... Microids just will not let this go. And so 18 months after the remake's nightmare release, they've announced that they're basically going to try it one more time. Only this time with new developers who have spent a year reworking the 2020 release into something more acceptable. Original studio Playmagic are gone, replaced by French studio Tower 5. And in a statement released on the game's Steam page, Microids says, emphasis mine, to achieve the quality standards and other and offer an optimal gaming experience, Microids decided to entrust the development of 13 Remake to the French studio Tower 5. Hard at work for more than a year on this major update, this update will be released on September 13th. On that date, owners of the game will receive a free update and enjoy the game as intended. The development studio reworked the entire game from the art direction to the AI and added numerous technical improvements. Specifically, some of those numerous improvements include, via an image they put out the statement, a reworked HUD and revamped sound design. This is Luke at Kotaku, of course. I cannot think of another time this has happened, especially in this time frame. So it'll be interesting to check this game out in September to see how far it's come. Mike, what do you think?
I think so much. That's a lot. That's like, there are just so... I would watch... Forget Persona. I want to watch the documentary about the making of this game. Like, that's fascinating to me. Like, just there's because you've got there, basically, you've got the original developers of the game, then you've got the intermediary one who did the first version of this, and now you've got the new studio. I get worried if I have to get, like, two programmers to work in the same part of the game. The idea that you would basically kind of basically restart this process three times with three different studios is mind-bogglingly complex. Like, the project manager on that game needs to be paid double whatever they're being paid, because the amount of moving parts like tied to that is fascinating. But I think it is unprecedented. I've not heard, especially as they say, like, with that much speed, that's really quick to turn that around. So the idea is this would basically be a second remake that would be released as like an update, basically.
Yeah,
that
you basically get it, they're fixing the game. They're gonna, if you own it, you download this update and it would be this new version of the game.
But the fact that they're going into the AI and art, like AI going in post release and messing with your AI, is like, that's what that alone is like, oh, that's a lot of red flags in terms of production process. Good luck to them. I hope they pull it off. And
that's my thing, is turn around. I hope they nail it, because, I mean, again, and it's probably Microids is how I'm supposed to say it. I'm sure Microids is like, well, our name is fucked. You know what I mean? Like, we're attached to this thing that did not, that is a huge embarrassment that made headlines and people know about. Like, we have to try to make good by gamers by going out and be like, you know what? We've done this. And but yeah, the time frame and the flip on this, 18 months after this, they're going to come out and do this. And it's like, I wish him the best, because I was excited. I remember I had played 13 back in the day and I enjoyed 13.
I loved it as a kid, yeah.
And so that's the thing, is like, when it got announced, I was like, oh, you know what? I kicked the tires on that. And then it was like, this thing's terrible. I was like, you know what? I'm not going
to
do that.
Wilder gambits have worked out. Like, I best luck to the team. Like, genuinely, that if they can pull it off, that's an amazing turnaround. We'll see.
We will see. September is right around the corner, believe it or not. Start getting ready to go back to school, kids. Number seven and final on the Roper Report, ladies and gentlemen. Sea of Stars has been delayed by... This is Sabotage Studios' next one. Sea of Stars has been delayed. As we are closing in on a very big milestone, the road to launch becomes clearer, and we find ourselves here with a large body of text and our logos at the bottom. Keeping in mind our two main priorities, quality of life and our team... quality of life for our team and quality of the finished game, we can now confirm that Sea of Stars will be released in 2023. We understand waiting is a big ask and want to sincerely thank our community for the overwhelming support and positive vibes. In the meantime, we are looking at options to get a playable slice out to everyone this year. Of course, Sabotage made headlines and really made a name for themselves with The Messenger. Then they announced this, RPG, a throwback, if you will, even, you know what I mean, calling up a lot of nostalgia for it. And it's been on a lot of people's must playlist for this year, but now falling to 2023. And again, Mike, as we said throughout this episode, good. Take care of yourselves. Don't die from this game.
Yeah, no, basically, I hope they're using that to, and I'm sure they are using that to get some more time and some more space and some quality of life. That's again, like, that's another symptom of what I'm talking about the audience holding us accountable as an industry is that companies are actively talking about that now. It's impossible to imagine, like, 10 years ago, a press release where people said, we're going to take longer on this game because it'll make our team more healthy. That's wild. That's the bar moving, and that's awesome. Fingers crossed they get there and that everyone's doing okay.
100%. Mm-hmm. Mike, I can't wait to see how good Sea of Stars will be. But 2023 is so far away. If I wanted something more immediate, say what came to the mom and pop shops, where would I go?
I think if it was me, I'd go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah! Out! Today, the Xbox app and Stadia and all those things are now available on the 2022 Samsung smart TVs. Remember, that was a big deal that they were going to have the Xbox app on a TV natively. And you might say, well, 2022 Samsung TV, I'm not buying a new TV. That sucks. Blessing put in into random a tweet from Samsung Gaming that says, we will share details about the rollout to earlier models, 2021, etc., at a later date. Stay tuned.
Blessing, so you're like, that's Blessing, a KFGD thing, not a random thing.
I mean, I don't know. I put it there, but you know, Blessing, when he gets excited about his TV, he doesn't know what he's going to do with the information. He just shouts it out.
That's true.
I've definitely heard he just opens his window and yells it at Michael Heimlund. Out today, Outriders World Slayer is out on everything. Not Switch, obviously, but if it's Outriders, you can get the DLC now. Remember, we're streaming that tomorrow. It'll be a lot of fun in a sponsored stream. So come hang out with us and watch us play that. Hourglass is out on everything except everything. Everything. Lumberjack Simulator is on PC and Xbox. Cuphead, The Delicious Last Course, is on everything. Rabbids Party of Legends is on PlayStation 4, Switch, Xbox One. Alolothe Champions of the Four Kingdoms is on PC Early Access. Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak is out. Of Bird and Cage is on PS4. Ghost Runner, the complete edition, is on consoles and PC today. GTA Online announces there are plenty of ways to celebrate Independence Day in GTA Online this week, as players can take advantage of heavily discounted celebratory gear, add the patriotic Western Sovereign motorcycle to their collection free of charge, go skydiving with a free U.S. shoot bag, and more. The free Bloody Summer in-game event is kicking off in Dying Light 2 Stay Human today, giving Villador's survivors a chance to earn powerful weapons and loot for turning up the in-game carnage. New dates for you. Stranger of Paradise Final Fantasy Origins DLC expansion is launching on July 20th. Descenders is launching on mobile August 4th. Disco Elysium. Oh, damn it. This is out today, isn't it? I screwed it up. Sorry, everybody. Today, Disco Elysium received an update for PC, which introduces three new fonts and makes the world of Revical more accessible to those with common symptoms of dyslexia. Back to things that are coming up soon. Autonauts versus Pirate Bots is launching on July 28th. That's a great name. Serious Fun Football goes into early access on July 14th, 2022. 1920s inspired point and click Lord Winklebottom investigates, comes to Steam and consoles on July 28th. Another great name. Loud, a wholesome rhythm arcade story, is coming out on Switch July 15th, 2022, and the launch on PC, PlayStation, and Xbox will follow at later dates. And then Stellaris, console edition, is adding Aquatics Species Pack on August 25th. Whew. Deals of the day for you. This is everywhere, but I'm quoting Mario 64. July's free Prime gaming titles have been revealed. It's Maniac Mansion, Suzerain, Fishing North Atlantic, and Fell Seal Arbiter's Mark. Of course, there's a bunch of other stuff you can get from Prime Gaming as they keep doing the stuff. Luna's got new channels and stuff there for you. EA Play's involved with all of it, so you should go investigate it. And when you do that, especially you, person driving with your iced coffee right now, listening to this later, remember, if you have Amazon Prime, you have Prime Gaming, which gives you all the free games, but more important for us, gives you a free Twitch subscription to the channel of your choice. It does not auto renew. It expires every 30 days, and we would love it even if you don't use Twitch. You logged in with your Twitch account, connected your Amazon Prime, and then said, hey, I'll give it to Kind of Funny Games, because it really goes a long way for us. Mike?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Is this going well? Do you feel you feeling good
about it? You're killing it. I love working with you. You know what I mean? I'm not going to name names, but I work with another British guy a lot on this show, and he's just the worst. Mm-hmm. But you're the other side of the coin, right? Like, he's all bitter and cranky and old. You're young and nice and vibrant. I can't believe you're talking about
Nick. I'm the Tom Hardy to his Patrick Stewart, basically. Yeah,
exactly. See, that's what I'm talking about there. No, you killed this episode.
James McAvoy to his Patrick Stewart. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have a good time? Did you have fun?
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. I'm British though, so that's as hard as I can express that. Yeah, yeah.
Well, what I appreciate about you, and I think you don't really understand, is that when you think you're subdued, like, you're just always at that level. And so you never dip below it. I think it was Dice this year, right? Where I ran into you and then you tweeted about it after the fact of like, every time I run into Greg, I'm knackered and I'm just I don't have anything to say. And I'm like, you're just always Mike. Like, I've had brunch with you when you're like, you know, at a 10. I'm like, that's just Mike. That's how Mike is. Just Mike.
Awesome.
Just Mike. Games. Mike, we asked people watching live to go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Tell us what we screwed up. But we've been good today. We had that one thing where they clarified something for us. But other than that, we haven't screwed anything up.
This is the standard that I bring to the show.
Crushed it. I appreciate that. That, you know, when we have somebody who knows what they're talking about when it comes to video games on the show, it really goes far into not letting us get into the you're wrong territory. I appreciate that. But of course, Mike, your time's not done here. Ladies and gentlemen, like we said, Thomas was alone. 10-year anniversary. Can you believe it? No, you can't. Come on over to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Mike's going to hang out with us and have a longer post show than usual and talk about his career, talk about the game, talk about what it's like 10 years later, all that stuff. Talk about working on John Wick. Talk about working with Greg Miller on the Solitaire conspiracy. There's a lot of stuff for him to talk about. So there's a lot coming up. Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can get the show ad free, where you can write it to be part of the show, where you can watch us record shows like PS I Love You later this afternoon, XCast tomorrow, the Gamescast whenever we do that live, long before anybody else gets it. And just a great way to say, hey, kind of funny, you're doing great. Here's some money. No, we're not in trouble. Don't panic. I'm just saying, though, help. Pitch in, you know what I mean? And fucking throw us a buck, goddamn. Do the thing with the Twitch Prime, you know what I mean? Jesus.
The vibe is just like, yeah, everything's fine, you know, everything's all good, but please, for the God, love of God, help us.
Yeah, bad, you know, I'm just, it's wrong. I'm just saying, like, you know, where the fuck's your problem? God. Ladies and gentlemen, believe it, of course, the show, that's not right anymore. No, that's right. I changed it. Ladies and gentlemen, our show's over, but Kind of Funny Games Daily isn't, of course. You have one more episode. It pops tomorrow. It's going to be Blessing at Ayoye Jr. and IGN's Rebecca Valentine talking to you about the day's news tomorrow. Remember, if you're watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames right now, it's Tim Getty's birthday bash. They are playing Cuphead. Are you doing the race again in Cuphead, Barrett? Or are you guys playing Cuphead?
I don't think it's a race. I think we're gonna do kind of a back and forth where, like, each time we die, like we'll show Tim's gameplay and then we'll go back to me and stuff like that. I don't think we prepped for a race. I think the thing today was this: we wanted to go in blind.
Excellent. You can catch that, of course, live, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. And if you're watching later, youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. But right now, the big thing, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, to hear Mike Bithlow talk about his illustrious career and what Alana Pierce is really like. They weren't going to get to it. See, I knew it. I've known it for a long time. It's no way. Ladies and gentlemen, like we said, Patreon, all that jazz. Go buy Mike's games. Mike, congratulations.
Well, discount right now on Switch and PC.
There you go. Yeah. Why do you hate PlayStation? Is it Shuhei? Is Shuhei in the problem? Is he the problem?
It's Shuhei. Yeah. He really upset me. We don't talk about it, though.
Okay. We won't talk about it. Congratulations on 10 years, Mike. I love you so much.
Thank you. I love you too.
Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.